And we are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3732 of the Survival Podcast. And it's going to be spicy today. Today's episode is 12 Reasons We Suck as a Species. It's not really directed at anybody individually, but my guess is that even the indoctrinated, the initiated, whatever you want to call yourselves, the TSP people, in today's episode, in the live stream especially, like, there's going to be a whole lot of hell yeah, he's right, and there's going to be a, wait a minute, he can't say that, or maybe not can't say that, or he shouldn't say that, or who knows what. They were asking, is this going to be like really a, like a logic-based stick, or is it going to be fire and brimstone? And I said, well, mostly brimstone. I also said, I wonder how many people know what brimstone even actually is. Might be interesting for you to look that up if you use the term all the time, fire and brimstone, or are very familiar with it, but yet you don't really know what brimstone is, because there is a stone component to it, at least in one definition, but fire and brimstone can refer to other things, and it might be interesting to know what you're saying when you say it if you don't know, and the only way you can learn things is to admit that you don't know them. I also say the only way you can learn things is to first admit that you're wrong, because if you're right, you would already know it. So that's another little lesson today. So what are we talking about today? Again, 12 reasons we suck as a species. This is something that's bouncing around in my head. It's related to the Charlie Kirk thing, which I can't really get out of my mind right now. Chris says brimstone equals sulfur. That is true. But then there's other definitions. Okay. But yes, sulfur linked to torment in hell is actually the concept there. But no, I really can't get off of this right now fully. I have an interview tomorrow that will help me get completely off of this, because we'll be talking to an old friend of mine, a gentleman named Patrick Seaman, who was the first real employee at AudioNet, which became broadcast.com. We're going to be talking about the streaming wars and technology and stuff like that, and how this applies to modern entrepreneurship. And so we're going to get back into kind of business, lifestyle design, stuff like that tomorrow, but not today. No, today we're going to talk about these 12 reasons we suck as a species. And it doesn't mean that you suck. It doesn't mean that you suck as a species. In other words, my personal opinion of human beings is we are the ultimate life form on this planet, in many ways. I'm not saying we're acting like it, or I wouldn't be doing a show with the title, so hear me out. Don't get all, you know, your panties in a wad, right? No, but we are the ultimate species. Like, if you want to compare us to anything that you can look at and say, well, maybe they're doing it better than us, you're looking at maybe, like, large ocean mammals, like perhaps orcas or humpback whales or something. And for all of the romanticization of those types of critters, I don't think they have the rational capability that a human does. When I say we suck as a species, I'm not saying that we suck in and of ourselves. It's relative to our potential. In other words, we have the potential to be such an amazing force for good for all, and we are failing miserably, and maybe in some ways more than at any time in history. I'm not saying that there weren't times when human beings as a whole weren't more deprived and you know, worse than we are today as far as their actions. But those people didn't know what we know. Those people didn't have what we have. They didn't have the opportunity that we have today. They didn't have the access to information that we have today. You know, it's one thing to scream, "She's a witch, burn her," when you can't look up what a witch is. It's another thing to say, "He's a horrible person that wants to stone people, kill him," when you can actually look up and see what the person said. Right? Like, there's a big difference there. So I'm going into this today to look at the problems, because the problems are the solutions when we use a permaculture lens, and we should look at everything through a permaculture lens. Notice I didn't say that will always be the way to find the answer, but it's a good way to start looking for the answer. And one of those pieces of that lens is the problem is a solution. If it hurts to do a thing and the thing is not necessary and not beneficial, stop doing it. Sometimes the problem is a solution is complex, but sometimes it's that simple. Like, if we have a belief that is a problem, the solution is to find out if the belief is true. And if it's not, stop believing something that's not true. Sometimes the solution is that simple. Sometimes it really is. We have kind of two spaces in our world with understanding things, mechanistic and quantum. Mechanistic and quantum. And I know that doesn't seem related to what I'm talking about today, but it is. And here's how. Mechanistic is A plus B equals C every time. That's mechanistic. If I take A and B and put them together, I get C. In other words, if I take sodium and chloride and put them together, I get a bond, and then I get NaCl3. That's a chemical equation, right, to make salt. But not all the sodium and the chlorine bonds to form salt unless I specifically direct it to do so, removing probability. The quantum way of looking at things says A and B can equal C or C plus D or C plus 4 or C plus 19 or C minus 7 or C minus like 1,000 different ones. And then the estimated probabilities of those things occurring. Humans are incredibly dynamic. We don't work in mechanistic ways. We are quantum species. If I put a message out into the world, I can say the probability is that 70% of people will react this way, and then all these other subgroups will act different ways. And I can be pretty accurate with that, but that variable has to be accounted for. And what's happened is that we're now in a place where most of the things I'm going to tell you are true. And they have a very high preponderance in the quantum computation of causing us to suck, if that makes sense. We all suck is what Idaho Puma says, right? We all do suck in some ways. In fact, if you can't admit that you suck at some things, you can't actually get better at anything. Like, I'll tell you what I suck at. I suck at drawing. I can't draw. It's really weird, too, because I'm one of those people that can completely visualize a thing. Like some artists, literally, the reason they can draw so well is they can just visualize it, and it's like they can put it over the paper and they can trace it. I can visualize it and put it over the paper, and I can, still can't do it. I can. Somebody can say, well, I'm going to put a deck on that wall of that house that's going to go out 12 feet and be 16 foot long, and I can literally walk out there and drop a rock where the corners will be and be within inches, but I can't draw. For every strength we have weaknesses. And societies are great when we acknowledge the strengths and weaknesses. And when the people that are bad at something don't do that shit and rely on people that are good at it, and everybody does the thing that they're good at. That's a typical tribal society. One of the things we're going to talk about today, one of my reasons why we suck, reason number 5, will be tribalism versus tribal living. So this is going to be a deep intellectual show today. And the fire and brimstone's coming with it. So that's what we're going to get today. Also, I've made a decision about the show in general. Once I do my intro and I do my part where like the sponsors get their recognition off, we're doing sponsors, item of the day, and any other commercial shit we have. One time near the beginning, no more at the end. Yesterday was another one of those times like talk about so much serious stuff and then it's like, hey, let me tell you about this ratchet set. I don't want to do that anymore. So that might make the initial thing at the beginning a little longer, but I think it'll make the closes cleaner, and I think that's important. On that note, what do we got going on today for housekeeping, we will call it? First of all, we still have some tickets available to the workshop in November. They stay on sale until Friday, September the 19th. What time? I say close the business. It'll probably be midnight. I'll turn it off if I'm awake, but I probably won't be. So it'll probably be about the time I go to bed, which is usually about 10 o'clock my time. So I say close the business, and if you get in right under the wire, you get in. But I'm going to close it. Because I want to then build the event to the attendance number that we have. So unlike people that will keep going right up to the end, since I have to feed every single person, I have to count for every plate and every butt. When we get to Friday, we are done. We are done. The only way you would ever possibly pick up a ticket after that is somebody that bails out wants to sell their seat. And that does happen. Art by Lee Murphy says sound is cutting out again. I don't know. I'm going to try something right now. You guys tell me if everything gets better from this point forward. I think I've isolated and hopefully I have enough battery life to make it through the whole show. Because I think it has to do with some problems with USB-C connectors on MacBooks. And I may have to change the machine that I use. So we'll see how it goes from here. But I think that's what's going on. And keep that in mind when we get to something that we're going to talk about here in just a minute. Next up today is the Wealth Setting Podcast with John Pugliano. John just released a new episode yesterday, Small Cap Stocks Beware Unprofitable Zombie Companies. That's something coming to be more and more a problem. You definitely want to check out John's podcast. It is at wealthsteading.com where you can learn to grow your wealth the way you grow a garden. Wealthsteading.com, John Pugliano. Also, John, of course, is a member of the Expert Council, has been a good friend of the community and the show for going on like 15 years now. In fact, it's more than that. It's 15 years. I met him in 2010 at a prepper convention in Salt Lake City, Utah. And he has been a key part of our community ever since. He's a really, really amazing guy. He's also one of us, guys. One of us. He's a prepper. You know, he's got the garden. He's got the stored up food. He's got the ham radio license. He's got the guns. He is the guy. He's got the skill sets. Check him out today. John Pugliano, not your average investment manager. Next up today, let's go ahead and remind you guys about another really great sponsor, Start 9 Private Servers. If you want to really take back your right to privacy and control over your technology, you want to get over to start9.com and you want to get your hands on one of the Start 9 servers. These are very, very affordable, and they are very easy to actually use. This is something that will seem like, I don't know if I can do this. Can you install apps on your smartphone? Can you use those apps? Then you can run a Start 9 server. All you're doing is changing like where you store your data and how you communicate. The only thing that you would do with Start 9 that's a little bit complex is honestly setting up and running a Bitcoin Lightning node. That requires expertise that you can learn. It's not that hard. It's just different. But it has absolutely nothing to do with the concept that you're using Start 9. You would have to do that anywhere you ran a Bitcoin Lightning node. But all of the other things like file storage, access from anywhere, across encryption, right, so that you control your data, end-to-end encrypted messaging, all the other things. If you can run apps on a smartphone, a Google Android or an iPhone, you could do this. That's all it really comes down to. Check it out today at start9.com. Remember, if you come to the workshop, Jesse Markowitz is going to be walking people through exactly how to set up and use your Start 9 servers. So that'll be a really cool thing that we've added. And then real quick before we move on today, I want to let you guys know that the web service router, or the router, I guess, I'm sorry, the TP-Deco tri-band mesh system, router system, is on sale today. This is what I went to a few years ago. And I went to it because I was constantly having problems whenever we did workshops here, even smaller ones with like 20 people on a weekend. Once you gave people a network password, the network started having problems. And I'm like, the backhaul that we have from Spectrum is more than sufficient for what's going on here. It was my LAN, my local area network. I found these, the AXE 5400 tri-band mesh system. They are the best thing I've ever used for home networking, and they are expandable. You can buy one unit, add it to your mesh system, and expand it just by plugging it in, turning it on, and clicking a couple buttons. It's really easy to do. And I know the reason I said, like, with the sound glitch a little bit, I know that when I say how great my network is and then you have me, like, you know, max headrooming a little bit, again, I think what's going on, I think I finally worked it out, that we have some issues with MacBooks, specifically the new generation of MacBooks and the first couple years they were made when they switched to all USB-C connections, they get loose. And I've looked this up, and it is a problem, and I'm not sure what to do about it with mine, because otherwise this machine is in great shape. And I use Mac and PC, and I really like each one for different things. And I really like my MacBook for my machine to use for live streaming, so I'm not sure what to do about this. My understanding, the only thing that really can be done is literally, like, take it apart and re-solder the connections. So anyways, got any ideas on that? I'd love to hear it. All right, with that, let's go ahead and dig into today's topic. I'm going to say right now, Rodney, you asked the question right, but I'm not answering that today. Rodney comes out straight out of the gate, way off topic. No, this is not a variety show today. We're not doing way off topic questions in today's live stream. questions need to be at least somewhat related to what we're doing. If you have a question, though, Rodney gives you the formula. The word question in all caps followed by your question in a single sentence, and we'll get there. I'm not picking on you, Rodney. I'm just going to be honest with you, bro. I'm not doing it. All right. So, again, the 12 reasons we suck as a species, and I wanted to put in the title right now to dictate that this is a current situation that we're in. We've been in a situation before, and we've not been. We've had Renaissance, and we've had Dark Ages. Yeah? So it is right now. Why didn't I put that in? Because it's too freaking long for a podcast title. It's too long for podcast artwork. It's too long for SEO. But that's really what I'm saying. Right now, this moment in time, as a species, we have reached one of our societal lows. We are completely failing to live up to what we are as beings, both physical in our innate evolutionary capability, and I believe also spiritually. And you don't have to be a Christian, you don't have to be Jew, you don't have to be a Muslim or a Buddhist or any religion at all to see a spiritual component to what we are. You don't even have to believe in God to see what you would still consider a spiritual component in what we are. There is more to man than mechanistics. I talked about the quantum component. Well, there's also a spiritual component. There's a reason that two people that are physically the same size and strength and had very similar upbringings will respond to a crisis in two totally different ways. It's inside. It's that spirit to me, one way or another. And we are failing at the spiritual level, whether you invoke religion or not. We are failing, and we are failing at the mechanistic level of what a human being, just based on what we are, our humanoid form, our capability, our past performance, every metric by which you would judge what humans can do, put a man on the moon in 1969. And yes, that happened. I'm sorry, conspiracy theorists, right? Like, figured out how to fly over 100 years ago, how to actually fly, how to break the bonds of gravity. The beauty of the great masters in art, right? The cities that we have built in the past. The amazing way that economics worked when economics was actually allowed to work, right? All of the things, the incredible educations that were enabled and provided to people in our past. All of the things that we can do versus what we are choosing to do, the vast majority of us, to me, that makes us failure as our own species right now relative to what we're capable of. So what are these 12 reasons I feel that way? And again, this is not the only reasons. These are the ones that occurred to me this morning while I was taking care of my ducks. Okay? This is the kind of shit I think about when I'm like, giving ducks water and food. Number one is a lack of clarity to societal roles. Now, this is where I get accused of saying women should be barefoot in the kitchen having babies and making sandwiches. No. I don't mean that. But there is a difference, for God's sakes, between men and women. We are not the same, nor are we designed to be the same, nor should we be the same. Nor are male and female the same in any species on this planet with any sort of higher reasoning. Even some fairly low-level creatures have distinctive differences between male and female, not just in their body size and type, but how they act and what they do and what role they serve. Look at a lion pride. What's the male's job? He's not even really the hunter. Most of the hunting is done by the lionesses. He's a protector. And he keeps order. That's his job. Right? He hangs out with some of the cubs, kicks the young cubs out when they're getting a bit too old to stick with the pack, so they'll go out and find another pride to run so that they don't have a genetic bottleneck, eventually ceding control to one of his sons. Right? Stand upwind of the game and chase them down to the lions so they can kill them. When the hyenas come, freaking rip ass and destroy, right? There's a purpose. There's a clear defined role. And in every traditional society, men and women have clear roles. Even in very advanced societies who are not in denial of this reality, there are some clear roles. it doesn't mean that women can't have a job, right? It doesn't mean that women can't be a scientist or whatever. But if we stop accepting the fact that women are more emotionally led and men are more logically led, then everything goes to shit from there. I'm sorry, it does. It does. Because there is an innate strength in emotional strength, right? Being able to see compassion, being able to be more motherly. Did that bother you, that term? Tough shit. I don't care. I'm here to tell you the truth today, not what you want to hear. There's incredible value in that. But there's also incredible weakness in it. Because, to quote Machiavelli, those who are cruel when they are kind when they should be cruel will end up being cruel when they should be kind. Now, do you think that means that the men should be in charge of anything? No, because the logical component is a great strength. It also could be a great weakness when it lacks the ability to identify when compassion should be shown. And it is by the balance of those two things working in consort with each other that you have a well-ordered and run society. This is why we even had indigenous Native American societies that if you looked at them from a distance, you would say that's very patriarchal. You would say, look, the men are the warriors. They go out and, you know, defend the tribe, and they look like they're in charge of everything. But some of those tribes, especially like that were part of like the League of Five Nations, Northeastern United States, right? They were actually very matriarchal. The women made the decisions and the men carried them out. But if you make a decision completely counter to what the person that has to carry it out is willing to do, they won't do it. Balance. So there is a certain certainty in society when basic roles are understood. And we've lost all of that. Now, is this why we have all of our problems? No. It's not. These are not in order like here's the biggest problem and we're going to go downhill. Nor are they in order. This is the smallest problem. We're going to go uphill. It's not like that. These all contribute and play off of each other. But where we've lost, I mean, the fact that we're even having discussions like, should a man be able to put on a dress, claim he's a woman, and play woman sports, that shows a lack of an understanding of roles of the gender. Women will never be pound for pound as strong as men. Are there some exceptions? Are there some women that are like super badasses and guys that are total pussies, even if they weigh about the same and are about the same frame? Sure. Okay, there's also people that can run the freaking mile in like 3 minutes and 45 seconds or some shit. That is not an average human speed. Are humans capable of this? Or another example would be dogs, right? Malinois, right? Malinois can do all this shit. Not all of them can. The ones trained to do it can. And even if you train them to do it, there are exceptional and not exceptional versions. There's the median. And on the median, women are physically weaker than men. They have less lung capacity. They have a different thought process. And it's why even a competition of something like chess, where there should be no real difference between men and women, most grandmasters are male. If you look at the top chess players in the world, there's not a woman in the top 100, as far as I know, last time I checked. If that changed, okay, but it'll be one or two. Right? It'll be like, oh, there's 98 of them. You're wrong. Okay. You just proved me right, though, because that's the average. Does that mean men are smarter? No, it means in the game of chess, which is very logically based, and one of the biggest things you can do to defeat your opponent in chess is to frustrate them and make them act irrationally with emotion versus logic, that favors the male mind. And there's probably other games, other forms of competition that would favor the female mind. See? That's all okay. When we left that, we became open to all the other problems. So it's not the main cause, but it does make us open when we straight up forget what we are as a species. Number two, a belief that our problems, and I'm talking about us individually now, are someone else's responsibility. The day we hit that, it's pretty much over from there. Because then we became subject to the whims of those that actually control the levers of power. Which I said, isn't really the elected officials in government. It's the media. It's academia. Okay? Those are your two primary. It's the banking system. We'll get to all of this today. Right? And if it is government, it's more the bureaucrat, made person, the person that's assigned, that's hired, that has a job for life, that never stands election, those four entities have way more power than the people we elect. That's why they let us elect those people. If voting worked, they wouldn't let us do it. Remember that old quip? There's some truth to it. But that in of itself isn't the only problem. When we start thinking, well, because I'm poor, somebody should do something about it. Well, you're right. But that somebody is the motherfucker in the mirror. That's the somebody that should do something about it. Because I can't figure out how to buy a house, somebody should give me a house. And then this leads to the bigger problem. If it's not my responsibility, then someone else is responsible, and that person is the enemy. This is the illogical boomer hate by Gen Z. I can't buy a house because the boomers ruined it. That is the dumbest shit to ever come. Like, everybody that says that, I think you're an idiot the minute you say it. Maybe not about all things in life, but what you're talking about, you know nothing about. The average boomer had no more say when they were 25 than you have now that you're 25. In fact, you probably have more influence. I would tell you that I think people listen to 20 to 25-year-olds today way more than they did in 1970 to 1975. Way more. You just, the fact that you even have a way to amplify your voice means you're heard more. Nobody gave a fuck what you, I'm Gen X, bro. And in the 1990s, you know who gave a fuck what people in their 20s thought? Nobody. Even people in their 20s didn't give a fuck what we thought. Right? We didn't give a fuck what we thought about ourselves. You think these people had some sort of undue influence? You think a vote meant more in 1976 than it does in 2025? Really? Why do you think that? Because somebody, if it's not your responsibility, then it must be somebody else's fault. Okay, it's not your fault, and it's not any group's fault. It's the fault of the entire system that we have that was built without the approval of any of us. You think the system we have was built by your grandpa? Because you're stupid. Because some of the other problems we have made you stupid. You've been manufactured into stupid. I'm sorry, you have. The belief that education equals intelligence. That's my next one. It's part of why stupid people think they're smart. Do you know the best thing you can have in a society? Honest to God, one of the best things you can have in a society is a society where stupid people know that they're stupid. Or people know what they're stupid about is more accurate. Because I do not believe that anybody is actually stupid. I think what people are is ignorant. In other words, they don't know things. That's not stupid, right? But stupid is when you're ignorant to something and you believe yourself to be informed, so you conduct yourself as though you're not ignorant about that which you're ignorant about. And what we've done is convinced people that if you have initials after your name, not DNR, but things like BA, MBA, PhD, that equals smart. It does not equal smart. I have hired people with master's degrees that are retarded. And you think this person's not retarded until you give them a basic task and you go, holy shit, this person can't do anything. There are plenty of people that have no competence at all that think they're smart. They're not informed about anything, but they speak as though they're informed. This leads to all kinds of problems, like conspiracy theories that are just nonsensical, that are not helpful, right? Not only do we think the NASA Jew space laser penguins killed Charlie Kirk, but there's people saying things like, to prove it, where's the autopsy? Where's the bullet? As though you've been given the autopsy and bullet of every person ever been killed high profile in history. This isn't JFK. Right? And the upshot of those people is he was really hit in a vest. And the bullet went up off the vest and cut his throat. And that's what really happened. Okay, here's some things about those people. Because I'm back to a belief that your education equals your intelligence. They don't have any intelligence about this. They don't have any knowledge of this. No one that actually has worked with ballistic armor believes that. Only people that play Fortnite believe that, right? Some kind of nonsense. First of all, Charlie Kirk wasn't wearing armor. And the kind of armor that stops a 3006 and turns it, that's heavy plate armor. The guy that's walking around like this and coming out like this in a thin shirt right before he speaks, yet not wearing plate armor. Soft armor, 3006, right through like it's butter. That's what would happen. So you either have light, you know, body armor, which won't stop it, or none. But you don't have, and by the way, when a 3006 round hits a plate, it doesn't just turn. It would have torn the shit as it turned, okay? Like, this is, again, this is people equating whatever they see as education with intelligence. When you're educated, you know what you were taught, and unless you bring wisdom to go with that, nothing more. Nothing more. Yeah, there's a good, there you go. Armor doesn't come with fox nipples. He wasn't wearing any. I agree. I was going to let that go, but yeah, I completely agree with that, by the way. But yeah, this belief that because you went to school, you're intelligent. I've seen so many young people say, we are the most educated generation in history, and yet we're suffering. You are not the most educated generation in history. Most of you could not pass the exam that you had to pass to get into high school in 1890. Look it up if you doubt me. Most of you couldn't. A high school student in 1890s to early 1900s spoke Latin, among other things. You are not the most educated generation in history. Most of you couldn't figure out how to change a spark plug in a lawnmower. You are not the most educated generation in history. Most of you can't cook beyond a microwave oven or a toaster oven. You're not the most educated generation in history. You're not. And the people you listen to who you think are smart because they have more education than you, again, they only know what they've been taught. And then we have two things about that. Number one, being really smart about subject A doesn't mean you know fuck all about subject B. That's the obvious one. But the other thing is if you are taught incorrectly about subject A, so you believe you know subject A, and yet you are wrong about it, that's even worse. And if society says, look, they're really smart because they have a master's degree in whatever bullshit, then we're even in bigger trouble. That's when you have people coming out of top universities like Columbia with a degree in economics that can't explain the economics of how a lemonade stand runs. And the 8-year-old girl who set up the lemonade stand knows more about economics than the Columbia graduate. So that's a big piece of our problem. Another one? Directly related to it, but a little bit different. Our failure, my generation, people older than me and people younger than me, anybody old enough to have kids in their teens by now, we collectively, not necessarily you or me, but we collectively have failed to train competence into the youth. Competence. We're not even talking about like book smart learning here. We're talking about competence. Did you know if you get a hole in your jeans that you can't see, you can just sew it up and keep your jeans? Most people today don't know how to sew. Or you can get a patch off Amazon for $1 and iron it on and keep wearing your jeans. Most people today, young people, can't do that. Do you know that you can actually cook a steak for like a third of the price of going out to a steakhouse and eat a better steak for less money? Most people can't cook today. Again, I said it, you know, most people that are 20 years old and younger, and I'd say definitely older, many of them, if you said, here is a lawnmower, the spark plug is the problem. They don't even have to figure it out. Here is a new spark plug. Here is a ratchet set with deep sockets and a socket for spark plugs. Here's a gapping tool. Here's a book that tells you how to set the gap. Change a spark plug. This is a 2-minute job. Couldn't do it. So how in the hell can we even tell these young people who behave like idiots that it's all their fault that they don't know shit? How do we fail a generation, and two, really, because a lot of millennials can't do that shit either. How do we fail them that bad and then say they're the problem? We fail to teach them that. That's why we, and I said as a species, not as a generation. A species right now, which is the oldest down to the youngest, we are failing as human beings. What kind of parent doesn't teach its offspring the basic with a prefrontal cortex anyway? Because fish don't, right? Snakes don't. But some ways they're better parents than we are. But even a freaking monkey teaches its child how to crack things open, where to find the food, how to function as a monkey. We're not teaching our children how to function as a human. And then we're like, why are they so inhuman? Because you didn't teach them. You didn't ground them in any kind of clarity with their societal roles. That's why they think they can become the opposite sex, and they think it'll make them happy. They blame you for their problems because you haven't taught them that they're responsible for themselves before anybody else is, right? They believe that they're smart when they don't know shit, and then we fail to give them any basic level of confidence. Our youth have learned just enough to barely function in society. They only learn these other life skills when they're up against the wall and they have to. And most often, the solution is a credit card and a trip to Firestone versus fixing it themselves. Look, I was a mechanic in the Army. If my vehicle needs fucking work done, I pay somebody to do it. I don't have the time for that shit anymore. I really don't. I don't. I'm sorry. I'm done. It costs me less to have a mechanic change my oil than my time is worth at this point in my life. But I know how to do it. And there was a time in my life where, like, you need new brakes. Well, I can go down to the shop that says it's $199. And by the time they're done dicking me around, it's going to be $500. And by the time they're done dicking you around, it's going to be $1,000 to $1,200. That $199 is to get you in the door. Or I can go buy the brake pads for $80 and do the job myself in 2 hours. There was a time in my life that was what I did. Because I had the confidence of being able to do it. And this leads to less problems, right? This leads to less problems. Because now you're less broke, and now you can save more money. So instead of telling these kids, skip the avocado toast, which, by the way, you could buy avocados and bread and a toaster and save money. True. But when they're dropping $1,200 on a brake job, because we didn't train competence into them to know how to do a brake job, whose fault is it? Now, whose responsibility is it? It's their responsibility. They have something you didn't. You learned how to do brakes, if you did, from your dad or your granddad. They have YouTube. You didn't have that. They don't only really have, like, somebody to train them. They literally, like, if you got a part out of order, you can look up the exact model you're working on and say, oh, yeah, that piece goes there. By the way, if you're doing any work on something, take pictures with your camera phone that you have. Use your brain. Right? And the tools at your disposal, take pictures when it's together. And as you take the whole thing apart, take pictures. And that way, when you go to put it back together, you will remember where all the parts go, because otherwise you will not. Right? And there's Humble Mechanic right on cue. It's like I said some mechanical things, and it was like saying Humble Mechanic 3 times, Beetlejuice 3 times, and he showed up. Cool. All right, moving on. Let's talk about the next one. This is one that I think people really are not going to grok out of the gate. Okay? We have tribalism, but not tribal living. Tribal living is a good thing. Tribal living is all the little unique neighborhoods and the way they used to operate in a place like South Philadelphia. That's tribal living. Tribalism is what we have today. I'm wondering if anybody out there, right, anybody out there even knows what I'm hitting on when I say this. We have tribalism versus tribal living. Well, here you go. Tribalism is anybody that says the things that sound like they're on our side is on our side. And anybody that says anything that sounds like they're not on our side isn't. And the worst thing you can do in a tribalism society, ism is always the problem. Isms are always bad, right? Is say 90% of what your side, your tribe believes, and 10% of what they don't. You are worse than the opposing tribe now. John Fetterman is getting flailed by his own party for saying, shut up, a guy died, just wish his family well, and shut your mouth. Which is the same logical thing to do in that situation. He's being attacked harder than people on the hard right. That's tribalism versus tribal living. What is tribal living? Tribal living is the people directly around you are first and foremost your tribe, even when you disagree with them, right? You think in all these tribes, whether it be indigenous societies in Africa or Australia or North America or South America or wherever, Mongolia, right? You think that everybody in that tribe just agrees with everybody else in that tribe and just always gets along and never has a disagreement? Have you ever seen a group of like more than 20 humans where everybody agreed on everything that they did and wanted to do? That's nonsense. That's fantasy. That's fairy tale thinking. That's happily ever after bullshit. It doesn't happen. Tribal living is that I might disagree with Mark, or I might disagree with Mick or Debbie or Susie or whoever, but they're my tribe first. I live with them. They're my next door neighbor. I have to get along with them even if I disagree with them. That's how tribes worked. Tribes worked that way. And you know who got exiled or like disappeared in tribal life? The person who rebelled above all things above that. The person that set themselves apart and said, but I'm right, and Debbie needs to shut up, and we need to get rid of her. Bro, you're out. You're out. Like, you could disagree, but once the chief says, okay, we've heard everybody, and this is what we're doing, everybody shut up, and everybody did it. And even if you didn't like your tribe, your fellow tribe member, if someone from an opposing tribe were to attack them, you defended them, just like you do your family. Tribal living is like extended familial living. The neighborhood was important. Hell, I grew up when this was still a thing. It's not that old. Where I grew up in central Pennsylvania, Schuylkill County, like there was a neighborhood kind of thing. Like, you know, you hang out with all the guys over on Race Street. You know, if you're from Pottsville, there's like one person listening to this even knows what I'm talking about, right? Or the Norwegian Street group, right? Or the guys from Marlin. Like, there was a certain, like, or if you played, you know, a sport, like, you played football, and you have, like, the beta on the football team, the lowest guy, the guy that if he slacks off 1%, the coach is going to cut him. But he's there. And he might get fucked with by all the people on the team, but, bro, you say something to him, and the captain of the team's like, bitch, I didn't see you there on freaking Tuesday morning when we were in for early workouts. What have you got to say about anybody on this team? That's tribalism. That's tribalism. I'm sorry, that's tribal living. Tribalism is all these people that have no impact on your life in any way you're affiliated with, and all these people that have no impact on your life in any way you hate. You hate them. Tribes don't work on hatred. Not even intertribe. Sometimes there was warfare. Warfare is as old as humans, I was going to say, but really warfare is as old as life. There's warfare at the bacteria scale, right? There's warfare in the soil. There's warfare in the water drop. But human warfare is as old as humans. So there's always been some conflict. But in general, the way tribes worked is like, yeah, you know, we're getting to kind of like, even early humans understood genetic bottlenecks. Like, hey, we need to like maybe send some of our folks there, and they need to send some, do some swapping out. And like, that means you have to get along. And that also means like you have cousins and other relatives that are in these satellite tribes around you, and that makes you more likely to get along. That's how the system of royalty was developed to a degree, and for one of many reasons, right? Control, true, but it was also like, if these two monarchs are cousins, they're less likely to go to war. Didn't always work, but it at least was a rational thought. Tribal living versus tribalism. Almost everything that you add an ism to destroys it, even if it's useful. Social interaction, fine. Socialism, bad. See? Capital markets, good. Capitalism, cronyism. That's what it turns into all the time because of the banks. We'll get there, don't worry. How about full economic illiteracy, even among our economic experts? Yes, that does kind of go back to belief that education equals intelligence, but we, like, some of the siloed niches are huge anyway, and this is one of them. The average person in this country does not understand the economic system we live under at all. The average person who is highly educated to economics, I'm talking like economics degrees, finance degrees, etc., believe the economic system we have is the best that we can do. Both of those are a problem. Both of those are a tremendous problem. We live under an incredibly predatory monetary system where a very small group of people decide how much the money will cost you to acquire through debt and lending and even work, and how much your money will be reduced in value by on an annual basis by changing a number on a chart. I'm oversimplifying, but I'm not actually wrong in my oversimplification. There's a lot of explanation in that, but that's what it comes down to. A very small group of people get together in a room and decide, fuck what the market says. We think too many people have jobs. We'll just make money more expensive and things more expensive until enough people get fired to bring the system into balance. And those people think they're smarter than millions and billions of people making individual, personally motivated decisions and letting the market dictate itself. There is no place where that makes sense for humanity as a whole. It only benefits the people in the cabal and the people very adjacent. The Cantillon effect, right? The Cantillionaires. The closer you are to the money spigot, the more you benefit. And if you can, even if you don't turn the spigot and let the money out, if you can catch the first money to come out of the spigot at a super low cost and essentially sell it into circulation, you will take as much money as you can get out of the spigot, even if you don't get to directly keep it, because you're making a percentage off the total. That's how the entire economic system works. And the people that are economically, you know, educated are educated just enough to defend that system. And the first thing we do with them after they become educated, assuming they don't get a job like making coffee or something like that, if they actually get a job in the economic system as an economist, a finance person, something like that, is we entrench them into it by allowing them to profit from what they know. And that means they will defend it to their death, because they become one of the haves, and their goal does not become to make things better, but not to lose what they have. And that is completely by design. But the average person in this country could not tell you how dollars created. Most of you can, because I've covered it so many times over 17 years. So most of you can. The average person, where does money come from? The government prints it. The government doesn't print any money. The government approves debt, the banks print the money, and fine, they print it. How? With a printing press? No. 97% of U.S. dollars are not in paper form. They're digital only. How do they create a dollar? They don't know. Some of you are screaming at me right now, they do it because what they do is they issue a bond. And like, yeah, I understand that, you know. Tell me that 90, if you went just man on the street interview, you interviewed 100 people, 90 of the 100 minimum would not be able to tell you where a dollar comes from when it is born as a new dollar. They wouldn't know what the M2 money supply is or the M3 money supply or why they took it away. They think the government creates the money. They think the Federal Reserve is a part of the government. It's not. It has very little government oversight. Look how bad Trump wants to fire people. He can't do it. The president gets to appoint them, but he has no control over them once he does. And they're all pre-approved before they even get in front of the president. They're all part of the cabal. So how can you have a well-run system from an economic standpoint when the average person in the system doesn't understand the most basic concepts of the economic system itself? And then defers to experts who have been trained and indoctrinated to use the economic system as a method of control, even if they believe they're not doing it. We suck as a species. It's very simple. The crow that figured out that if he brings certain things back to a person, he'll get a treat, understands economics better than the average person with a degree in economics. I'm sorry, it's true. The next is, we have abandoned the scientific method, but the people who have most abandoned the scientific method are scientists. I learned the scientific method for the first time probably about 7th or 8th grade, and then we learned it even at a much higher level by conducting our own experiments in high school. The scientific method is actually a dramatically simple process, and its primary purpose is error detection. You have to be able to run the experiment, You have to be able to draw the conclusion. You have to be able to then make what you did available to others. They have to be able to repeat the experiment and get repeatable results. And then you say this is reasonably a good scientific theory. It's no longer a hypothesis. That's the scientific method in a nutshell. It really is. Okay? And I didn't come up with that. You know who did? Actual scientists, right? This is the whole thing you learned in school or not. I don't know when they stopped teaching it, but like one of the examples we learned is that people used to believe that rotting meat created flies. Seemed like it made sense. Meat rotted, there's flies. And then because of that, there's maggots. So rotting meat created maggots. Flies come from maggots, and maggots come from rotting meat. So if there was no rotting meat, there wouldn't be any flies. We all know that's dumb. But at the time, they didn't know. People just observed and rationally went, there's rotted meat, there's maggots in it, next thing you know, there's flies. Okay. Not rationalizing. So they did an experiment. You put some rotted meat out, you put rotted meat in a jar and put a cloth over it that flies can't get into. One meat ends up covered in maggots, the other meat doesn't. Aha, now we have a variable. And no matter how many times we repeat the experiment, we get the same result. Now we know something has to interact with the meat. So now we observe flies. If we prevent the flies, so we could actually now put a sieve on the top that would even let some things in, but no flies, no maggots. And if we do it in a time of year where there are no flies, we still get no maggots. Now we're able to discern flies, you know, use rotting flesh to reproduce through a multi-stage process that begins with an egg, goes to a maggot, goes to a fly. That's a scientific method. I learned that probably in ninth or 10th grade. And other versions thereof. Now, scientific results are for sale. There's literally a price list. Peer review is for sale. And we have people who market themselves as scientific experts saying the science is settled. There's different hierarchies in science. There's hypothesis, there's theory, and there's law. Law is the highest. We now treat hypothesis, the lowest, as though it is stronger than scientific law. Because even scientific law allows for evolution of that law, more understanding of it, or understanding that maybe what we think is not actually true. Anybody that says the science is settled doesn't understand science. Or they do understand science, and what they really want is control. Science has become an authority versus an error detection process. The point of science was to take power away from the elite. At the time, the elite were mostly backed by, controlled by part of religious apparatus when these methods were developed. The church said it, and the king repeated it, so it is true and not to be questioned. Now, if you're going to have a way to debunk that, then everybody has to be able to do it. Not only special people, right? And there are some things that are super advanced. Like if you're going to be making like a particle accelerator, you know, a hadron collider or something. Okay, yeah, I get that. But in general, day to day, when we look at something we do not understand, the average person, even if they don't have the material to do the experiment, should be able to comprehend this is how the experiment was done, this is why it makes sense, or this is why the method wasn't followed. And when you simply point out you don't have a control group, so it's not science, they call you a Nazi. You must be a Trump supporter. Why? Because I noticed you didn't have a control group in your experiment, which means it's not a fucking experiment. Or that you had a control group but was only open for 5 days and were looking for side effects that happened over 2 years. And then you gave the people that were in the control group the same substance you gave to the people in the experimental group. And I noticed that, and that makes me a Trump supporter? God, you must think anybody that's not is really fucking stupid then. This is a huge problem. You can't have a science-based society that calls things science that are unscientific. And that's exactly what we have. How about perverse incentives in society at every level? Humans follow incentives. Don't believe me? I'll prove it to you. Take a pan, put it on top of your stove, put your hand in the pan, turn the burner on. Long before you get really hurt, unless you're super stupid and willing to harm yourself solely for the purpose of proving you wrong, which I can't help you then, it will start to get warm, it will start to become a little bit painful, and you'll start thinking, holy shit, my hand is going to seriously burn, and you will remove your hand. Because the incentive that you created for yourself was don't leave your hand there. Put your hand in a bowl full of salted ice water, and you'll only leave your hand in there so long before it really starts to hurt, and you'll follow the incentive, which is stop the pain. Pain is a very strong incentive, the avoidance of pain. And so is the accumulation of wealth. So is the avoidance of not just necessarily painful, but uncomfortable situations. In other words, I have a strong incentive to get a good job and make a good income because living in squalor sucks. So that's an incentive. If there is something that will make me better at what I do, I have a very strong incentive to purchase it or acquire it. Okay? Humans run on incentives. And including incentives that are not good for them, but they are good for them short term. People genuinely will chase short term incentives over long term incentives. That's another problem we have. We think in quarters instead of generations. Hell, we think in weeks instead of years. And we think in years instead of generations. That's a big part of the problem, but it's the incentives that cause it. So we are not incentivized to save money, so we don't. We don't save money. This is not a nation of savers. We are a nation of investors that invest in things we do not understand based on a booklet that says it did good in the past, so it'll probably do good in the future, but we don't understand the investment. As most people, what do you think the manager of your ETF or mutual fund does when you're holding mid-cap stocks and the stock market is clearly going to go down? Well, they say they rebalance. No, they don't. They hold mid-cap stocks. So you're investing in something you don't understand. They literally cannot. Like, if I'm running a mid-cap stock ETF and I see, like, the entire mid-cap sector is about to get its ass waxed, I won't be able to say, you know what I'm going to do? For now, I'm going to take my fund and I'm going to move all of the money into cash, and I'm going to hold 50% cash, 50% stocks. When the market corrects, I'm going to take the cash and go back in. That's trading. Mid-cap stock ETF or mutual fund manager cannot do that. Do you think the average person that buys that fund knows that? No, the financial wire actually infers otherwise when they come to your place of work to sign up for your 401k. They don't say it because then they would be breaking the law, but they infer it. These guys really know what they're doing. They send people to the company to work for them before. No, they don't. Don't do any of that fucking shit. Nonsensical bullshit. You can get away with that. I didn't know. That's what I was told. They don't actually tell you that they can't trade out of the way of a freight train, but they infer it by talking about how smart these people are that run these funds, which, honest to God, a computer can run these funds at this point because it's that cut and dry. It's that cut and dry. I have an article. If you go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and search for the term experts with an S, not expert, singular, you'll find that article as a first listing. It's called Can a Dart Beat the Experts? And I lay out exactly why a dart can beat the experts in investing. So you don't save. There's a perverse incentive against saving, and that is the erosion of the value of money. You call it inflation. And most people can't tell you the difference between inflation and supply and demand effect. They're different. And most people will tell you that inflation is simply the increase in the monetary supply. It's not. It's not. Inflation is an increase in the monetary supply that exceeds the increase in the supply side of the economics. In other words, the velocity of money, how fast it moves and multiplies in the economy relative to the growth of the economy itself, is what actually causes inflation. There has to be more money chasing the same amount or less goods and services. If you have more money chasing more goods and services, you don't get inflation. It will cancel itself out. The entire system is designed to make sure there's always inflation no matter what. And it's bad when it's perfect. When they do it perfectly, it's bad. And how often do these giant entities do things perfectly? Almost never. So that incentive, you're incentivized not to save, only to risk. and to borrow, not to save. If you run a business today and you fund it out of pocket, you are at an inherent disadvantage. So why would you? Out of principle? No, you won't follow principle. Most people won't follow. And most people that follow principle in that way will lose. You will follow incentive. We have perverse incentives. And the perversion of the incentives is primarily economic, though there's many other perversions of it, but the root is economics. And we got into the most perverse form of it in 1971. And as I always say, all you have to do is go to WTFHappenedIn1971.com. And you can see every problem we have expand exponentially beginning in 1971. The funny thing is, if you go back 1971 prior with any of those graphs, you see like reasonable upticks in inflation and in growth and certain other things. But everybody goes has one inflection point where they go parabolic when they change the money. When the money became 100% debt-backed, the incentive became 100% perverse. And there's so many perverse incentives right now. If I'm applying to college, even if I'm this white, you know, putting down Hispanic, you know, Spierkes, change my name to Spierkes and put down Hispanic, like that's a perverse incentive. But I bet you I could change my last name, not tell any lies about who I am, my age, anything else. Also claim to be gay, though, right? Like, but like my professional background, leave the survival podcast out, right? Even with shitty test scores, even being in my 50s, never having gone to college, I bet you I could get into a pretty esteemed university right now if I work the incentives to trigger all the right words. But a lot of young people who are Asian or white, especially male and straight, can't get into that same institution. That is a perverse incentive. Idaho Puma says, say your pronouns are he, her, them. Maybe, but you know what? Even if I put on my college application he, him, which is actually true, my odds go up because I said the words. You're incentivizing people to say stupid shit. We have perverse incentives across the board. You are going to have a perverse society when your primary incentives are perverse. And you can keep digging through that on your own. How about a belief by many that programs like DEI make any sense at all? I'm going to tell you more than 50% of people in this country, even some that are like the DEI went too far, they think, well, but yeah, it's a good thing. If it just, they overdid it. There's no place for DEI. There's no place for any sort of like minority preference in hiring. There's no place for any of this because it's another perverse incentive. I'm a company. My company's falling on hard times. Let's just say the name of my company is Cracker Barrel. Cracker Barrel. Now, a lot of people think that the woke 40-something glasses-wearing CEO who tried to take Uncle Herschel away and change it into some sort of modern hellscape on the inside, all that she's the problem. And she is a DEI hire, I'm sorry. She's not the problem, she's the gas on the fire. Cracker Barrel stock price has been tanking for about 10 years. And I'll tell you why. If you went to Cracker Barrel 15 years ago and you ordered biscuits and gravy, you got great big old cathead biscuits, right? And you got lots of biscuits. If you didn't ask for biscuits, they brought you fucking biscuits. You got a big ass dish of gravy and you got beautiful, great big home style sausage patties to put on your biscuits and your gravy. And it was about $8. And the lady came out and said, how may I help you, honey? And you got perfect service. You got quick service. And okay, it's not the food that I generally eat, but it is comfort food and it does taste good. And there will be biscuits and gravy at the fall workshop, better than Cracker Barrels, I promise you. Okay? But it was good quality food with great service. So the quality of the food and service went to shit. I know, we'll go hire the woman, because we got to hire a woman, a woke white woman, affluent liberal, to run our company and turn us around. The same one that fucked up Taco Bell. Do you know how bad you have to suck to fuck up Taco Bell? And she did. Taco Bell became worse. Well, she ran Taco Bell, guys. She made Taco Bell worse. How do you, I don't know how you make something that bad worse, but she did it. Taco Bell all of a sudden is like a co-location store with like, it's in the same building. Like the counters split and this side is Long John Silver's or Popeye's and this is Taco Bell. That does not show growth in a brand. I'm sorry. That's trying to lean out efficiency because you're going bankrupt. Took away the shit people actually bought. I know. Let's hire her. All right. DEI leads to this, and this equity, inclusion, mindset, et cetera, all of it, all of the different verbiage they've used, all the different adjectives they've used to describe it leads to this. Is she the person who took away caramel empanadas? I don't know that. She did take away some. There's something that people like fucking loved at Taco Bell that she took away, right? Okay. Now, back to Cracker Barrel. Why would you hire this person? Their track record is dog shit. But she checked the box. Woke white woman. We have a female CEO. She's down with the trans, man. All that shit. Like, but your bigger problem. This is your bigger problem. If I'm on a board for a company and we're looking for a new CEO, the first thing I want to know about that CEO is, do they love our product, our service, and our brand, and do they want to make it better? That's the first thing I want to know. We'll get the competence. But if we can't get past that, if I'm a board member of a restaurant chain, right, I want to know, does this person we're talking about hiring, do they eat at our restaurant? Have they ever eaten at our restaurant? Look at that woman and you tell me she ever ate at a Cracker Barrel in her life before she was hired and did it for a photo op. No. I want someone that loves the product, first and foremost. If TSP was bigger and I was hiring someone like as an operations manager, do you think I'm going to hire somebody that never listens to the show, that doesn't give a fuck about me or you? No. But why do you hire someone like that? Because they check these other boxes. Now, we have this happening in corporate society, in the media, academia, and in government. So we have, the minute you say, right, Joe Biden, who are you going to make your vice president? I don't know, but it'll be a woman of color. You just narrowed the field in an incredibly important role. And believe it or not, there's only so many people that will take the job as vice president of the United States. There's not that many. You think there are because it sounds really flashy. But a lot of people, especially if Joe Biden's going to be president, oh, I want to be tied off to that. So you just narrowed the field in an incredibly important position. When you magnify that across millions of jobs and millions of positions, National Geographic, you scum, then you're going to end up with incompetent people in important roles. I'm not saying that you can't find a black female that would be good at this job, right? I'm not saying Cracker Barrel couldn't have found a woman in her 40s that would have been good at the job. I'm saying they didn't because they were more concerned with finding a woman who was politically a certain way so that they could make nice with people that would never eat their product in the first place than they were with finding someone who loved who and what they were, what they stood for, what the culture of their company was, and wanted to make it better. She wanted to make it more profitable. She did not want to make it better. And because you don't want to make it better, it's impossible that you will really make it more profitable for long, especially a brand with the loyalty to it that it had. And that's just Cracker Barrel. This now applies to positions like people who decide whether you get prosecuted or not in your state government, your county government, and your federal government. People who teach your children in school. People who teach your young adult children in college. People who decide whether they get into college or not. People who decide whether they get their first job or not. People who decide whether they get fucking promoted or not. This is cancer. Our society cannot become great again until DEI is DEAD. And I don't care if you call it something else. Everything like it must go. When I promote somebody, I should not give a fuck what sex they are, what color they are. I should only care, is this the best person available from the talent pool to do this job under these circumstances at this time. That's meritocracy. No society's ever been become great that's turned their back on merit. And we don't give a fuck about merit in this country anymore as a whole. You think... You believe the TV when they say these extreme retards you see on TikTok are the minority. They are not. They are the minority of being that extremely retarded. But more than half of this country believes in this bullshit. More than half. I'm sorry. It's true. How about the fact that any trust in media remains at all in our world? But I want to be clear. I am going to tell you that I think it is a dangerous point in society when people have lost all faith in institutions. That alone, though, does not mean that you should have faith in institutions. When the institution has failed, you need to have stop having faith in it. The solution is not to regain faith, but to fix the institution. Anyone who trusted the media, and I didn't trust the media in 2008 when I started this show, at all. Even a little bit, okay? But anybody that trusted it, after what we witnessed from late 2019 to about mid-2022, is fundamentally brain damaged. They're fundamentally brain damaged. And my wife has a theory, by the way, about the vaccine. Not just the side effects and all. She thinks it, like, affects people's brains. And I have a hard time disagreeing with her on that. And she's like, and I think the more times they did it, the more it affects their brains. And I'm like, honey, don't you think it might be the more times they did it, the more they feel the need to defend it? She goes, absolutely. Plus, I think it damages their brains. And if you look at the arc of idiocy since that time in our, like, all this shit was here, 2019 to 2022, and it's almost like what the fuck happened in 1971 all over, what the fuck happened in 2019. This arc went straight up after they dropped that jab. You do that with that as you will. Either way, we have a problem. We should not trust the media, though. And that includes the ones you like. You people that love Fox News. That Mark Siegel, that asshole they have on there, that doctor, he's the biggest pharma shill I've ever seen in my life. He's worse than the ones on MSNBC because at least you know those fuckers are lying. That fucker motherfucked the shit out of fucking Ken Berry. That guy doesn't know nutrition from his asshole. And he talked all kinds of shit about Ken Berry when they did a little thing. Oh, this is dangerous. Children don't get enough nutrients without carbohydrates. You brain dead pile of crap. Right? And then immediately the commercial comes on for Pfizer, Merck, and Moderna. Right after that, that's fucking, yeah. And you trust them? You trust them? I'm not saying every word that comes out of their mouth is a lie. Every word that comes out of their mouth should be treated as a lie until you prove otherwise. You should take no solace in anything the media says about anything at all, period. The fact that we trust people who are proven known liars means we're screwed. How can we ever, we're going to hold them accountable and hold their feet to the fire? You can't. If you believe the existing structure can be repaired, you're in denial. There's points where you look at a building and you go, well, we need a building here. In fact, we need, like a 12-story building, and that's a 12-story building. It needs to be about these dimensions and have about this amount of square footage on it, and that has that. It was built in 1897, hasn't been taken care of, there's been an earthquake, fault in the, like you look at it and you go, what that building needs is a controlled demolition to be hauled away and be completely rebuilt. There's a point where you say people buy houses do it too. Like they buy a property, it's got a house on it. You look at the house and you bring an architect in and the guy goes, it needs a matchstick, bro. It needs an excavator. It needs an excavator with a grabber and a dump truck. It isn't, there's nothing left to work with. That's the media. And I'm going to add to it, that's academia in this country. We can't fix the education system as it is. It has to be ripped apart. But the media, as I said yesterday, is the bigger problem. Because the media is the feed mechanism for all of this. How do you take over the media? You start indoctrinating people in the educational system in the 1920s to your leftist ideological bullshit. You ramp it up after World War II, right when we're going USA number one, right? Yeah, right? Right while that's going on and nobody's paying attention because everybody's out doing shit, you really ramp up what you're doing to the kids and all of the veterans that came home and all of the people that worked hard to get the country through the war years are like, yeah, I'm sending Johnny off to college. And by the 1970s, you have people in their 30s and 40s at their prime operating time in life, taking over as CEOs, company presidents, program directors, and all the media. And then the media shifts. And then the media reinforces the message. And then the two start working like two incestuous perverts. And they both get stronger. That's where we're at. And you trust the media. Anybody that trusts the media at all right now, I don't even want to talk to you. I don't even want to talk to you. Now, if you tell me it was reported and you say, and I've confirmed it because I've done some. Now, that I respect. That I respect. We can't say that everything they say is a lie because the best way to sell lies is with truth. By the way, rules for radicals. One thing you'll pick up there if you actually read the book. Sometimes the best way to sell the truth is with a lie. That's dishonest. I didn't say it was honest. I said it was effective. You better understand what's effective because they damn sure do and they'll damn sure use it on you. How about equating rights to access or actions with rights to be provided for or acted on behalf of? You have a right to access to healthcare. In other words, nobody should be able to say you can't have healthcare because you're blue or whatever, right? Or you're too stupid or you're too smart to have healthcare. I'll agree with that. But you don't have a right to have it provided to you. How many problems do we have from people equating like a right to be able to do a thing with equating that with the right to have somebody do it for you? How many people think a right to something absolves you of the responsibility of it? What's going on with the left right now? I thought the right was for free speech. I thought that they felt that people should be able to say what they wanted to say, no matter what it was, and they were absolutely for free speech. You know, honestly, until you guys fucked around and found out, that was pretty much the average person on the right's opinion. It really was, including things they found reprehensible. Like I said, those days are over. T-Dow, bitch. Charlie was the olive branch, and you set it on fire, and we're fucking done. How long? I don't know. Maybe forever. I don't know. But no, we're done. We're completely done with your bullshit, right? But none of us ever said that you had a right to no consequences when you acted on your right to free speech. And there's a difference between, here's this guy, and he's online, and I don't like him. And he works as a, I don't know, he's an air conditioning technician. And so I'm going to go through all his shit, and I'm going to find out that when he was 15 years old, he said something that could be construed as racist. I'm going to rally all the retards in the retard brigade, and we're going to storm his employer to get him fired. There's a difference in that. In a person who's a nurse or a teacher teaching children, celebrating the death of a human being moments after it happened. I'm sorry. There is a difference. There is a difference. In the future, same instance, if I had somebody that was living a great life and working for me, and had grown up, right? And they're like 24 years old now. And it turned out when they were 14, they piled on with the left retards for the Charlie Kirk thing. I would be willing to forgive them. They're 14. They're a kid. It was 10 years ago. Their life is no longer consistent with that person. That's a person who has changed who and what they are. That's a person with that's contrite in that I was wrong in the past. I'm okay with that. The adult doing it today, that's a nurse or a doctor, you have healthcare professionals saying, I wouldn't even have treated him if he came into my ER, then get the fuck out on the street. 100%. 100%. You're right, the free speech does not negate the consequences of acting on it. And we live in a society where people think rights equals I can do this and not have any consequences. You have a right to walk up to a random stranger on the street. You have every right in the world to walk up to them and call them all kinds of bad names. You might get a consequence of being punched in the mouth. And everybody around you might go, maybe you'll learn, and walk away. And when you call the police, even people that saw it happen might be like, I didn't see nothing. There's responsibilities and there's rights, and they're different. In fact, every right, I got tore up by my own people back in like 2009 for saying this. Every right has a corresponding responsibility. Every right has multiple corresponding responsibilities. I believe you have every right to own a gun. And I believe you have a lot of freedom with how you exercise that right. But you do have a responsibility to make sure that your weapons are secure in some way. Depending on where you live and how you live, that may be different for different people. Some people, that might be the majority of their weapons are in very high-end safes. And only things like a personal defense weapon is immediately available. For other people, it might be, you know, back in the day, like everybody just had a gun cabinet inside their house with the front door locked. So if you then say, well, I have a right to own a gun, so that means that I can live in a neighborhood where kids play and lean my loaded rifle up against a tree in my front yard? No, you don't have that right. You do have that right, but there's a responsibility that you're abdicating. And society has decided that you are a danger and you might suffer a consequence for it. But we live in a society today where specifically the left believes that their rights are absolute. And what's even worse than that is they believe their rights are absolute, but the other sides are not. See, once you call somebody a Nazi, well, they don't get rights. Hitler wouldn't have had rights. Bitch, Stalin shouldn't have had rights either then. And I see a lot less fascists and a hell of a lot more commies in our world today. I'm sorry. The last one is, I hit this yesterday, but I couldn't leave it out today. A lack of understanding where real power is. The average person doesn't understand where power is today. So if you don't understand where power is, you can't fight power, you can't shift power, you can't work with power, you can't work against power, you can't channel power. You're just subject to power. You're subject to power. The best way to brainwash somebody is for them to not know you're doing it. Right? You lock somebody in a room and they know you're brainwashing them, they're going to resist with everything they have. If you bring them into the same room with 25 other people and say, I'm Mrs. Wilson, I'm here to help you learn today, they'll go right along with it. Yeah? So where is the real power? Media? Academia? Banking? And unelected government officials? And it's pretty much in that order. In fact, I would say maybe banking goes to the front of the line. Banking's a hard one. Because people accept it because of the conditioning. And your two strongest centers of power for the average person in society today are media and academia. How can you think, I'm fighting the system when you are a cog of the system? You think you're fighting the system, the system's a V8 motor, and you're a freaking cylinder. Right? You're a piston. You're a cam on a shaft, and you think you're fighting the engine. You are a piece of the engine. These young kids that are in college, you think they're fighting the system? You are the system. You're a product of the system. You're in the system. You're part of the system. You are a designed cog in the system. You don't know anything about where power comes from. Most people do not know where power comes from. John Lee says, banking has negatively affected my life far more than the others. You don't know that, John. It's the obvious thing that's affected your life. Why is that bank able to do what it does? Why is that bank able to do what it does? Why is that bank able to do what it does? Unquestioned, by the way. 95% of people, the minute you try to explain the banking system to them, will call you a conspiracy theorist. You can literally pull out publications by the Federal Reserve itself and show them that the Federal Reserve says the same thing you're saying about itself, and they'll still call you a conspiracy theorist. Why? Public opinion. Go along and get along. cog in the machine. What is the number one source of that? What is the number one source of the domestication of the human being? Academia. Academia has begot the media. Now, the banks, the reason I'll say to move them to the front of the line is they predate all of it. They're very sure of what they're doing. Was it Rockefeller? It was either Rockefeller or, I can't think of the other guy that said, it wasn't Rockefeller. It was one of the other big bankers, one of the European bankers. He said, give me control of a nation's money and I care not who makes its laws. So the banks may be the bigger villain, but what you see of it, like I can't get a mortgage, right? That is, it's really the behind the scenes component, the ability to control the value of the money. But why would a society allow a small select group of individuals, not just the power of governance, but power over the value of money? Because when I tell you that that entity has control over the value of money, if you're the average idiot, you don't believe me. Why don't you believe me? Because you've been educated to not believe me. The system is simple. I can explain how the monetary system works to a 10-year-old who has not been fully indoctrinated into bullshit yet, and they will understand it in 15 minutes. Give me 30 minutes and give me another 15 minutes to hand them a worksheet and 15 minutes to come back to me, and I'll put them on a microphone and they'll present it at a level where it can be understood by others. 1 hour. Not only will they understand it, they'll understand it, process it, extrapolate from it, and be able to present it back to you. Grammar, rhetoric, and logic, the trivium of education that we don't have anymore, right there. So who really has the power? Person steering the mind. You steer the money, you steer the mind, you steer the mind, you steer the money. I don't know which one really gets the most blame. I know that it would actually probably be easier to fix the economic system right now than the educational system. That's the other thing. It's a quantity thing. How many people are actually in charge of education? How many colleges are there? How many high schools? How many grade schools? How many principals? Right? How many deans? How many presidents? How many superintendents of boards of education? How many people that select textbooks? How many people that write curriculum? Far more than the bankers. We could probably round up all the bankers, put them on one ship, tell them it's a cruise, and yeah, maybe it just goes to the Bermuda Triangle and disappears. But we could certainly provide people an economic alternative. And over time, markets will choose, even against the grain, the economic incentive that's more powerful and more beneficial long term. They will. Sooner or later, the economic system will correct. It always has. The educational institutions, funded with trillions of dollars, government grants on top of it, and elevated to religious status. Right. If I tell you there's two people and one of them has a degree from West Illinois University, I don't even know if that's a place, and one has a degree from Stanford, immediately people are like, well, person from Stanford, you don't even know what the degree's in. Maybe the one who went to West Illinois went to West Illinois Medical School and they're a freaking doctor and they're a freaking surgeon with 7 years of internship and fellowship behind them, and they're a cardiothoracic surgeon and the best there is. And the person that went to Stanford has a degree in gender studies and works for HR. Well, now which one? Oh, see? Why did you even, like, I know every one of you. Even when you were fighting it, there was a little piece of you, Stanford, yeah, I mean, this is a top school. Or Harvard. Now, many of you have begun to actually disdain those schools, but I bet you I could find two schools that you would be like, yeah, probably. If that's all I know, then and my response would be, I don't know. I know nothing. You notice I didn't even tell you the grades they got? Stanford degree, West Illinois, is a 4.0 at West Illinois, and the Stanford retard got out with a 2.8 in gender studies, and this guy has a medical degree. But we have elevated these educational institutions. We have designated certain titles as being almost religious in nature. BA, that's okay. Masters, wow. PhD, holy shit. 3 PhDs, wow. Doesn't mean anything. It doesn't mean anything. And we believe that it does. And so, as I said yesterday, one of the big problems that we have is the belief that because our side, whichever side that is, has been in power from time to time, that there is some balance of power. And we're convinced that the battle for power really is in the election, and it's not. I'm not saying it doesn't matter, it has no effect. And I will say, for all of the shit that I give Orange Man, if you put a gun to my head and you said, Jack, you have to decide, Orange Man or Cackles, I would have picked Orange Man. And I still would have picked Orange Man. And 4 years from now, I will still say that I would have picked Orange Man. And we would be worse off with that cackling hyena idiot. Absolutely. No matter how bad he is, she is worse. That doesn't make him good. But I also know that if I had the power of Thanos to change one thing and rip power from one group, the banks, the educational institutions, the media, or the government? Media. I would take the, academia. I would take the power from academia. Because I know in 2 generations, everything else changes. And I know if I don't take that power away, then everything will go back. The long-term change is to change the way that people are educated, to the way that people develop their understanding, right? The way they form. You have to understand why it's so powerful, by the way. Human beings, we decided, because we needed a number, that they were adults at 18. The female brain continues to develop till about 22, and the male brain till about 25. Some of the most important formative developments in the human brain for adulthood occur in those final years. 18 to 25 for men, 16 to 22 for women. If you control them during that period, the power and duration of the effect of control is extreme. It really is. Now, many break free. But even the ones that break free, they have this lingering, it's almost like, as a former Catholic, I can say this, almost like this lingering Catholic guilt. Like, long after I decided I'm out of organized religion, and I want nothing to do with the Catholic Church. And if you're Catholic, I'm not putting you down, I'm just saying that's where I came from. I would still find myself at times in certain situations going, maybe I shouldn't do this. And I would think about it and go, that's eighth grade Sunday school. You're not hurting anybody here. You're no under no obligation to this. And I'm only saying that's it. I'm not telling you to change your religious beliefs at all. You believe what you believe. I will go to my death defending your right to have whatever religion you want as long as you're not hurting anybody else. Okay? I'm just trying to make it something you can understand. Because a lot of you never went to college. Or if you did, you went to a sane college at a sane time where you didn't get all of this shit. I'm telling you, the 40-year-old who has washed off all of that stink, they're still in there. They're still open to these ideas. It's lifelong, unless it is specifically deprogrammed. The person realizes exactly what was done and takes conscious steps to separate. It never goes away. That's what I'm telling you. With that, guys, I really appreciate it. And as Tom says, please hit that like button. I would really appreciate it. I did not see questions, comments, et cetera, coming in that I starred today anyway, so I apologize for that. I won't be taking any of those at this time. I'm ready to wrap up. I do want to remind you guys, if you want to help out the show, one of the ways to do that, do your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. We do have the TP Deco router system today available and reviewed, and it is a great system. And also consider becoming a member of the Survival Podcast Member Support Brigade. That helps us out, gives you a bunch of discounts. With that, I'll be back tomorrow. Again, tomorrow's episode is going to be very different than probably anything I've done recently. I'm bringing on, again, Patrick Seaman. Now, I knew Patrick back in the 90s. Patrick was one of the people that helped build AudioNet into Broadcast.com and profited bigly, right, when it was sold off to Yahoo, went off and did his own thing eventually. Tried to help them for a while. But he has a new book out. It's called Streaming Wars. And Streaming Wars is about all the technology I'm using right now to talk to you and what the future looks like and how we got here. And I found his book, probably because there's a personal connection, to be really freaking interesting and entertaining. Patrick's a dude that at one point in time in history broke into Mark Cuban's house. Why? He'll tell you tomorrow why. I'm not going to tell you. If you heard me talk about it before, you already know. But he broke it wasn't illegal, but it was a break-in. And it was more than once. And it had to do with the technology of the time. Patrick's a guy that, like, when they started streaming content when everybody was still on dial-up, and it worked. They streamed the first Super Bowl. Like, people that think Broadcast.com didn't do anything, you don't know anything about it. That's part of why I'm bringing him on. But I'm also bringing him on because he's a consummate entrepreneur. And he's a good man. I mean, I know this man for over 20 years. And he also kind of goes back to, like, a time I talk about from time to time. And I don't think I've ever had anybody on the show that I know from those days. So I think that'll be fun, too. And hopefully you guys will come away with a new appreciation for the technology you have, how we got it, and more importantly, what you can do with it to build something for yourself in your own future. I talk about liberty and freedom all the time, but I'm going to tell you there is nothing more liberating than having a business that you own that is patronized by people to know exactly who you are so no one can ever cancel you, with enough money to not have to worry about money anymore and to be able to say, I'm taking a 10-day vacation to Alaska and there's nothing anybody can do about it. That's pretty damn liberating. And that's why I spend so much time on entrepreneurship. So that's going to be a big part. Technology, history, entrepreneurship. Tomorrow's show with Patrick Seaman. Please tune in for that. I know there's going to be more people today than tomorrow. But guys, he's a good friend of mine. And I'm asking you as a personal favor if you can tune in to the live. Tune into the live. Fascinating guy you can learn a lot from. They said you should have a house the American way. Dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.